Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. Man, what a time to be alive. There seems to be a sea change happening. Can you feel it? I was at a couple of events recently, and there was a number of people that came up to me and said that since Trump's re-election, they are feeling a sense of optimism, something that has been missing for a long time for most Americans. Americans are known for their optimism, and when that is missing, something essential gets lost. For me, I see our optimism, playfulness, and sense of excitement as a sort of superpower. The systems that we have lived under, they're really not our systems, they're the globalist systems, have created this sort of quiet desperation in people, and under the current fiat money system, things will keep getting more expensive forever. Think about that. No wonder people look so fried. Nobody can keep up. The antidote is Bitcoin. On a Bitcoin standard, everything that you need in life will continually get cheaper forever. We seem to be at an inflection point with the re-election of President Trump. There's a confluence of orange man with orange coin, and people are excited once again by the possibilities that are before us. And people are starting to realize that Bitcoin, this strange, wonderful pro-humanity technology, is not just a new money, but sits at the center of a full frontal assault on the corrupt globalist fiat system we all grew up with. Better days are ahead of us, Base Campers, and it is happening very fast. I wish you all Godspeed on this one. Enjoy this excellent interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today goes by the name of Caribou. Caribou is a father, a Bitcoiner, an independent creative thinker and futurist, and a regenerative farmer. Here's my interview with Caribou. Okay, I am here with Caribou, Bitcoiner, farmer, entrepreneur, father, new father, Caribou. Caribou, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Tony. Great to be here.
You know, I found you on Noster. You and I are both, you know, there's a lot of Bitcoiners on that emerging protocol. And I saw some stuff you were posting about food and sustainability and Bitcoin. I don't know. Something grabbed my attention. And I reached out and you were game to do a podcast. So I guess just to start with, just tell us a little bit about your background. Like, where are you from in the world? Where do you live now? Any kids, and also tell us just a bit about your farm, where that is, and what you got going with that to start with.
Yeah, sure thing. So I'm in Canada, Ottawa to be specific. Mm-hmm. My background is in health, so I'm formally trained as a physical therapist, but left that a while back, got sick of treating symptoms and diagnosing people, and shifted into more healthcare, which is, to me, just helping people take better care of themselves. I'm a husband. I'm a father of a one-year-old little girl. And I am on a journey to build out our family farm. We have a 3-acre piece of land that for the past 4.5 years I've been stewarding and preparing, getting ready for the point where we wanted to really fully commit to building a home, building some roots, and just, you know, growing as much of our own food in the most natural possible way as possible. And so after having our little girl, we decided that next year is the year. So I've been doing a lot of research and prep, and next year we'll be building a small home and beginning our journey to create world-class duck products. And the farm has a kind of a unique topography for duck. It's 3 acres, 1 acre is cleared. It's had cover crops planted on it for the past 3 years to kind of bring some life into the clay that was formerly farmland but hasn't been farmed in a long time. And then 2 acres is forested. And the topography is the cleared land is the highest level. Then there's like another level down, and that's an acre. And then there's another level down, which ends in a ravine and backs onto a mountain range, which is actually a national park. And so with snow melt, you know, we get a lot of snow. It's in Luskville, Quebec, so it's about 45 minutes from Ottawa. We get tons of snow melt. It goes from the upper level all the way down to the ravine, and along the way, there's natural ponds that are already formed in the forest. And so, you know, ducks need water. We have huge forest areas that are prime foraging for naturally raised ducks. And so we are going to clean up and design several pond ecosystems and build a flock of layers and meat ducks and raise them as naturally as humanly possible. And so, yeah, we're very excited to begin that journey. And I was honored when you reached out. I think there's good alignment. And I love talking about Bitcoin. I love talking about health. The intersection of Bitcoin and health is my true calling and passion and never feels like work. And so this is a treat for me. So thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. I love hearing the background and what you got going. It's super exciting. How did your Bitcoin journey begin? Like, what first caught your attention? Was it a person? Was it a video? And then what did you do? Like, how did you get orange pilled over time? What were the resources, or the podcast or the paper or the articles? Like, what did you find, and sort of how long did it take you to go from, a lot of people the first time they're like, I have no, like a good friend of mine described it way back in the early days. And I was just like, that sounds insane. I have no idea what you're talking about. Right. We laugh about that now because he was trying to orange pill me. And I'm like, I just can't understand what you're talking about. It's like a foreign language. But fast forward a few years later and, you know, I started to get that, the itch. I was like, what is this? I want to understand this more. And then that began, and I was kind of fortunate to, it was during COVID, so I wasn't working, and I had a lot of idle time, and that was the rabbit hole I went down, and thankfully, but how did it go for you? How long did it take you to go from, what is this, to, I feel, you know, a lot of confidence in putting my life force or my energy or my resources towards this?
Yeah, good question. For me, it started in 2015. I was treating as a physio. I had a software engineer as a patient who had lots of shoulder problems from spending all day at a computer. Mm-hmm. And he kept talking about Bitcoin. And, three or four visits, he just kept talking about it. And I figured, you know what, I may as well check this out just so I have something to talk about with him. Yeah. Bitcoin is about $100 at this point. And I remember saying, well, why don't I just buy some of this Bitcoin so that I have a reason to learn about it? Very grateful for that, you know, the perseverance of that patient, because that's what kind of nudged me in the first place to think about it. And it sort of sucked me in gradually. And then suddenly I remember consuming as much of Andreas Antonopoulos as I could. He was really the OG at the time.
Yep.
His book, The Internet of Money, was my first Bitcoin book ever, part one. And then I got part two and three. And I actually read them every single year to just re-up on the basics. I started working really young. I started making money and wasting money on silly things. And my grandfather was a really seasoned value investor. And so he taught me early on value investing. I read Benjamin Graham's The Intelligent Investor. So I had some basis of understanding the dynamics of value and how it existed in the world of equities. And that also just made me curious about money. And I started to see when things weren't really making sense. And so I think I was just primed to really be curious about Bitcoin. I'm very curious in general. So I never stopped studying Bitcoin. I actually never doubted it. And I don't know what it was, but I always would regularly put a little bit in. And I part of me felt like this is where the world is going to go. Every time I had doubts, I would just research and learn. And then in 2021, I really went full on. I worked for a company and we had a good amount of cash on the balance sheet. I was also a share owner. And that cash I was learning was just melting at an insane rate. And so I went through this manic phase of listening to everything I could with Michael Saylor. Learned about the strategy he was taking to preserve their capital. And, you know, obviously on a much smaller scale, did the same thing for this company. And that really opened up my eyes to think that, you know, this is a way bigger deal than what I thought. And around the same time, I had been spending pretty much my whole life trying to my whole professional life understanding how to help people improve their health. And one of the things I was constantly being told when I asked people, like, why, you know, do you know what to do to take better care of yourself? And they would often say yes. And I would ask them, and they were correct, simple things. And I would often ask, well, why aren't you doing them? And they would all say, well, I don't have the time. Mm. And it was at that point I realized that until people start saving their time in a form of money that doesn't steal their time, they'll never actually have the time to take care of themselves. And so that kind of punched me in the gut and said, you know, I got the insight that I'm spending all this time trying to solve the health problem, when in reality, the health problem is simply a direct derivative of the money problem. And so I decided at that point to really commit fully to Bitcoin. I developed pretty much a daily study practice. I got on the path to becoming a Bitcoin advisor, which is part of my work now, to just help individuals, companies, family offices, anyone who's curious, really, to understand how to acquire, custody, and secure Bitcoin on their either family balance sheet, business balance sheet. And so, initially it was Antonopoulos. Then I kind of slid into the world of podcasts as that exploded. The Bitcoin Standard. I have a big library of Bitcoin books. I've read every good book that I could find. Even the basics still intrigue me and still actually astound me at how magical Bitcoin is. So I think one of the things I did early on was realize that the best way to understand something is teach it. So I started a Bitcoin podcast called the Bitcoin Stoa and created sort of a database of podcasts that my mom could listen to understand Bitcoin.
Yeah,
and I think that was like a really big inflection point in my understanding, because then I actually had a reason to study it deeply and be able to explain it. And that's a different level of understanding. So yeah, since then it just, you know, it grabbed me. It never let me go. I had a pretty focused journey. I never actually did any work to understand any altcoins or other projects. I had friends that would always mention Ethereum and all this kind of stuff. And I just said, you know what? I don't know anything about those and I don't care about them. Bitcoin's the only one that's important and I think you should study it. And I guess I was kind of lucky in that way. Never got distracted. And thanks again to that physio patient for getting me started.
What a great story. You know, I remember there was, I'm a voracious reader of lots of things. So when I turned to Bitcoin, I naturally wanted to get, you know, Saif Edean's books and, you know, all of the library of books that Bitcoiners pass around, recommend, that has you understand it. And it was striking to me that I was like, you know, I was in the business school at university. And it was nothing but Keynesian. Like, we didn't get any Austrian economics. Like, that must have been way back in the, you know, 500s on the course catalog, if at all, right? We just didn't get an understanding of it. And I remember a light bulb going off, Caribou, when I realized that the reason that college is 150 grand a year and the reason that used cars are 30,000 a year, it's not that the house that's not very nice next door is just under a million. It's not the value, the utilitarian value of those things hasn't gone up at all. It's just the money is shit that it's being gauged in. And I remember just going, oh my God, of course that's what it is. Like, it was like seeing something really obvious in front of you finally for the first time, where I was like, holy cow. And at the same time, realizing that Bitcoin was going to be worth, now it might be volatile. I think it's going to get less volatile over time, but minus the volatility, Bitcoin is going to be worth more and more. In other words, your college education is going to be this much Bitcoin. Well, 4 years from now, 8 years from now, it's going to be worth less. It's not going to take as many sats for that college education or that house next door or the car. In other words, it's getting cheaper in Bitcoin terms, but always more expensive in fiat. And that was something that it's still kind of jaw-dropping to me, but I was just like, oh my God, of course, how could I have been so blind to this? But it just took a lot of pieces of the puzzle to finally see it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I think it's I've talked to a lot of Bitcoiners, heard a lot of Bitcoiners' stories. A very common sort of narrative, the realization that prices going up is not that things are necessarily getting more valuable. It's that the money is becoming less valuable. And so in relative terms, you have to pay more tokens for the same thing because tokens are becoming worth less.
Yeah.
And so it's a big insight to have. I it takes people a while to get there. Yeah. Some people never get there. But I think the pain of fiat is nudging people, more and more people, to get there. And once you're there, you don't go back.
Right, right. Well, and I think there is a piece of, I don't know how it is in Canada, but the younger generation here, I can hear the narrative like, we'll never be able to own a house. Right. That's almost like they talk about that, you know, the high schoolers or the kids in community college or in college. Yeah. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to afford a house because the prices are just moving away from me and I haven't even started my career. And so there's this resignation with a fiat mindset that I can't get there. And they probably can't with that approach. Because not everybody's going to, not everybody's going to be a doctor. Not everybody's going to be a C-suite executive at a tech company in Seattle. Like, some people are just going to work. But I always think, God, if we could just get the next generation to understand, if they can put their life force and their savings in a hard currency that is going to go up in value over time, they will be able to have land with a farm. They'll be able to afford all those things that maybe they think that they can't get using the fiat system and specifically having a fiat mindset.
Agreed. And I think Bitcoin is hope for disenfranchised younger people. Mm. I mean, once you realize that if you price the world in Bitcoin, if you adopt Bitcoin as your unit of account and you realize how incredibly early we are in the adoption of this new monetary paradigm, it actually gives incredible hope to the fact that everything you want is now getting cheaper instead of more expensive. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously a lot under the hood that has to go into building that understanding from first principles, and not because someone told it to you, but because you actually understand it to be true. But I think it's fiat is this really sinister mind virus that actually is very nihilistic and doomy. Mm-hmm. And you see it on people's faces, you see it in people's health. And Bitcoin is this beautiful shining antidote to that. And it's really kind of this really good representation of the hero's journey, because no one can actually give you that antidote except for yourself. Mm-hmm. And once you take it, the world radically changes and you have the opportunity to change everyone around you by introducing them to the antidote. You can't give it to them, but you can introduce them to it and give them something to explore that offers them a brighter outlook for their future. And so, yeah, I think it really is this incredible thing that is not just money. It is money is the first killer app, and it solves maybe the biggest problem we see in the world today. But it is so much more than that. I love being around Bitcoiners because they are hopeful. They're having kids. They're taking care of themselves. They're curious. They're learning. They're building their ability to deliver value to the world. They are the leaders of the future. They are the capital allocators of the future, although most people don't realize that yet. And so, that's what gives me hope for the fact that my daughter is going to grow up in a way better world than I ever grew up in, because a solution to the biggest problem that leads to almost all the other problems has now been created and is now impossible to stop. And the core of learning of what she's going to learn when she grows up is prioritized based on the things that she won't be able to opt out of, which are health and money. And that's where it's going to begin with. And it's going to revolve around play and health and self-directed learning. And just, I think Bitcoiners, the last thing I'll say is that Bitcoiners are saving their time and money that doesn't steal from them. So they have a surplus of time to think through things like school, things like parenting, things like how should a kid actually learn? How should they grow up? What is school? Why is it the way it is? Like, all these questions require bandwidth and time. And when you live in fiat, you don't have time. And you don't have bandwidth because you're constantly trying to catch up to the thing that's moving away from you, which is the affordability of life. Mm-hmm. And it just gives me, it really is, I sometimes do the mental experiment of like, where would I be without Bitcoin? And I don't stay there for long because it's not a happy experiment to do. Yeah. But, you know, thank God Bitcoin exists. Thank God my daughter and my, you know, brother's children get to grow up in a Bitcoin world. And, you know, the anger I occasionally feel with the suffering and harm induced by fiat is sometimes pretty intense. And the best thing I've learned is just to transmute that into learning more about Bitcoin and sharing Bitcoin with one more person. Yeah. And that makes for a very powerful energy tank to spread the message of sound money and ethical money and the moral imperative to shift your life's energy into the honest ledger.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You know, you hear a lot, I don't know if my listeners know this, but you hear a lot about a low time preference in the Bitcoin community and forums, low time preference. What does that mean to you? And, you know, why is it important? Why do Bitcoiners speak about that so much?
Yeah, I think time preference is really important and such a little known concept. And I actually wrote a white paper for a lower extremity health protocol. And one of the elements in there is time preference. So I actually went really deep in time preference because I really wanted to be able to articulate it and understand it. And so time preference is a term that describes our temporal orientation when we make decisions. So basically what that means is if you have a high time preference, you're prioritizing the present moment. Whereas if you have a low time preference, you are thinking more, you are weighting the future as more important than the present, right? So it's the classic cookie test, delay of gratification. You can have one cookie today or two cookies tomorrow. If all you care about is the present, then one cookie today is a better deal. But if you are thinking forward into the future and you're placing more value on the future than the present, then two cookies in the future is more appealing than one cookie today. And, you know, where does this factor into Bitcoin? Well, you know, I think it was Saif Edeen who said this, that money is effectively the control knob of our time preference. So if we use, you know, high time preference fiat money, it's going to nudge us towards high time preference behaviors. And the alternative is if we use low time preference money, hard money like Bitcoin, it will nudge us to low time preference behaviors. And this was especially relevant for me because if you're talking about health, health fundamentally is a low time preference endeavor. Yeah. I view health as a lifelong process of just understanding how to take better care of myself and then changing the way I live to make sure I have more natural inputs and less unnatural inputs. And so really by adopting hard money, I think individuals protect their time. So they have time to learn about the body. But they're, you know, I think adopting Bitcoin is the most powerful way to lower your time preference and allow you to think more about the importance of the future than just living for the day, right? Because if your money's going to be worth less tomorrow than it is today, you're incentivized to spend it today, even if it's on shit you don't need. And so I think high time preference fiat money is the primary driver of consumerism, mindless consumerism of just buying, 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 because it's going to be worth less tomorrow, so I may as well spend it today. Whereas Bitcoin is sort of this antidote to rampant consumerism, and it sharpens people's pencil when it comes to buying things. Because if the money's going to be worth more tomorrow, you know, metaphorically, than today, I really have to evaluate if the thing I want today is actually a need or a want. Knowing full well that if I wait, you know, do I need a car right now? Because if I don't, I'll be able to buy a car that's five times better for half the price in 4 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should do that.
Yeah.
And if tomorrow is worth living for, if you have kids, if you have money that's going to be worth more in the future, everything you do in life, every decision you make gets effectively weighted against that. And so I think, you know, in short, Bitcoin is good for your health. The best thing you can do for your health is save your time in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And that's a stretch for some people that don't have the underlying understanding, but I found it to be true. And yeah, I think time preference is really a key term, and really it's just, do you think short term or do you think long term? If you think short term, you have a higher time preference. If you think long term, you have a lower time preference. And I think for me, in my life, Bitcoin has gradually but certainly reduced my time preference over time which means I'm weighting the future as far more important than the present when I make decisions.
Well, and it aligns with you. Look at what you're doing with the farm. That is a low time preference endeavor. You're planning for many, many seasons in a row. You're planning the design of something that your daughter's going to grow up around. So you're automatically looking and saying, well, what do I want to do with this besides make these great products? But like, what are the steps? You're not thinking 6 months down the road. You might have a to-do list for the 6 months, but you're really looking at that. That's the beautiful part of hearing your backstory about what you've got going on, is that it aligns perfectly with Bitcoin. It's such a low time preference vision of a really beautiful future. I saw you had a antler reference on Noster. We didn't talk about this before we started, but I wanted to ask you if you'd read Jason Lowry's software.
Yeah, just to make a brief point on the previous point you made.
Yeah.
I think it's important to mention that not all farming is low time preference. I think
part of
the experiment that we want to do is a strictly regenerative farm with a focus on soil health and natural animal husbandry. And I think that is extremely low time preference.
Got it.
And I'm really curious to see what it's like for us to build our family farm on Bitcoin, because it naturally aligns with a regenerative approach, whereas building a farm on fiat and on high time preference money nudges farmers towards more higher time preference farming practices, like using pesticides to get rid of pests instead of, you know, working with nature to harmonize the ecosystem, or using fertilizer to get little short-term doses of nutrients, of limited nutrients, into the crops just to get a yield instead of actually regenerating the soil. So yeah, I think regenerative farming done naturally is a low time preference endeavor. And I think I want to do this experiment myself because I want to be able to help farmers who are working within a high time preference fiat mindset be able to see a pathway to transition over to lower time preference regenerative farming built on Bitcoin.
Beautiful.
Software. I own a copy of Software. I've read it. I'll probably read it multiple times. I think Jason Lowry has created a tremendous piece of work that will, in hindsight, go down in history as, you know, just a revolutionary individual sounding the alarm before everyone else really realizes what's happening. Mm-hmm. And, I really think that at the core of it, the notion that BitPower is going to enable mutually assured preservation and end the tirade of kinetic bloody wars is just a super powerful and hopeful concept for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anyone who really wants to get a deeper, broader understanding of Bitcoin beyond just its first killer app, which is money, I highly recommend you find Software. I'm sure there's a free PDF floating around the internet.
Yeah.
And, it really is, you know, Bitcoin gives you digital antlers to protect yourself from people who want to steal your property, which unfortunately might be the government you reside under. So yeah,
right.
Amazing book.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you read it?
I have. You know, I found it super challenging to read it and just
it's dense.
It's dense, and it's something about his writing style. I came away going, God, I wish he'd write a dummies version of this with some more stuff, because I did come away with, like, my takeaway, I think, if I had to be honest, was that the money, the monetary, as important as it is, it may be the Trojan horse to something else. Like, I came away with going, you know what, I feel like this is an attack on the deep state's fiat corruption and the Federal Reserve, which is not—it's just a private company that prints money. They steal. The IRS unlawfully really collects taxes. Like, the whole shitstorm of corruption around fiat, and I think that Bitcoin, from reading Lowry, that it almost came off as like people don't really understand how this got created, what it actually is, because he doesn't really talk about the monetary principles that much in the book. He talks about it as a war fighting technique and bit power. And so I was just left with a little bit of like, wow, there's so much I don't know about this. And I kind of ended up with a little bit of an inkling. I don't know if if this is true for you or not. I came away with a little bit of inkling of like, I think maybe Bitcoin Satoshi, I think it was maybe a military, a white hat military operation saying, if we don't have anything that is going to be a torpedo at fiat, we're never going to wrestle this away from them. We have to create something. And then Saylor just like, you know, showing what you do when you borrow, you know, a fiat and buy Bitcoin, you're seeing it in real time, what's happening with his company. And it's like, that seems like a full frontal assault on the Federal Reserve and the whole monetary system to me. And it does feel very soft war, what Saylor's doing in a way.
I agree. If you want to go down a deep rabbit hole, you can look up the Joint Chiefs of Staff actually published a paper, a military doctrine paper. It's available. And it's the term coin is actually used as a short form for counterinsurgency. And counterinsurgency is labeled as the combination of military and civilian measures by a government to defeat, contain, and manage an insurgency's root causes. And it talks about social, financial implications. And anyway, it really looks like the outline of Bitcoin being a joint civilian and military project to circumvent and undermine the insurgency that has been put upon us by the bankers and the Federal Reserve. And, you know, I don't go too far down that rabbit hole because it's a bit abstract and maybe not as relevant for me, but it is a really cool paper to read if you're curious. And I think it makes more sense than just some random dude creating the monetary protocol. Is probably a bunch of really smart people working together to implement an unstoppable monetary protocol that removes illegitimate authority from the bankers who have essentially tried to capture it. And it might be bigger than we think, but either way, it's just an incredible, Bitcoin is just this incredible thing that is, you know, we've been blessed to receive in this world and is changing the world in an unstoppable way. And I think for the average person, what matters most is, and the problem it solves most for them is inflation. That for me is my biggest in when I'm having conversations with people. But for people who are real deep and lost in the rabbit hole, there's a lot of different theories and different interconnected elements that you can piece together. And it's super fascinating.
It is. Absolutely. You know, you've got a 1-year-old daughter. So this is the conversation, or this question might seem a little far off, but I wanted to get your insights on it. You know, I have a 17-year-old, soon to be 18-year-old. How are you going to go about kind of instilling in her a proof of work kind of Bitcoin mindset? I think some of the people right now that have gotten in early to Bitcoin and have children, maybe, you know, full grown children, there's almost like, you're looking at it going, I don't want to raise a Bitcoin trust fund kid, you know, like a fiat mindset on top of the Bitcoin. So how do I coach him? Because right now, I mean, he's not the lowest time preference 17-year-old, although to his credit, he has stocks in a portfolio and he understands I'm not touching that, for I'm leaving that to grow. In fact, I'm going to try to contribute and grow that. But when it comes to Bitcoin, I think he's a little bit like, that's dad's thing. And he'd rather almost gamble on some of the altcoins because there's a chance he might hit it and get super rich, you know, which is a high time preference. Like, let's see if I can hit the jackpot. And so, yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Like, how do you nurture the Bitcoin low time preference, proof of work, maybe even the most important concept, so that they don't grow up thinking, well, I don't know how much Bitcoin my family has, but I have a feeling it's a pretty good chunk. So I don't need to really, you know how it is with entitlement. It's like, I don't need to really figure out what my work is or my mission or what I'm going to do to help the world. I don't need to ask those questions. I can just kind of coast and it looks like it might fall in my lap at some point. You know what I mean? So I know I'm probably putting a lot of things on there that may or may not happen, but I just wanted to ask the question because I think some of the Bitcoiners are maybe starting to talk amongst themselves about, what are you going to do about that? You know?
Yeah. It's a good question and an important consideration for sure. Just to touch on your 17-year-old's portfolio, this is investment advice. You should buy one share of MicroStrategy so that you can follow along with it and see if you can figure out how they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
That would be a good research experiment. I think the antidote to creating Bitcoin trust fund kids is good parenting and strong values. And, you know, our family values are health, integrity, kindness, and play. And we have a strong understanding that it is a moral imperative to create more than we consume. And I think just that alone really instills a different way of viewing the world, where we exist to create value for the world. After taking care of ourselves, we should always act with integrity, we should always be kind, and we should play a lot. So that's the way I'm going to go about it with my daughter. I think it was either Buffett or Munger. I think it was Buffett that recently said, you know, I want to give my kids enough that they can do anything, but not enough that they can do nothing. Mm. And I think, I don't really think there's a need to tell our kids how many sats we have until they have the mental capacity to understand what's at stake and what that means and the values around that as to like, how do you take that knowledge and actually secure it and keep yourself safe and keep a motivation to live in service of the world while maintaining good health. So I think, yeah, good parenting, strong values, clarity from parents, and just a real proof of work ethic in the way that a family lives their life, which begins with how the parents act. I think that's the biggest thing, is like, just be the example and instill good values and nudge your kids to learning about things that align with the Bitcoin philosophy. And I think the new generation of Bitcoiners will just be able to build, will be able to consume all the wisdom from their hopefully wise parents that have, you know, adopted Bitcoin and be able to build on that to further create the world that they want their kids to live in.
Yeah. That's beautiful. You know, I saw your life plan. I love it. Yeah, it was a post and it said life plan, and it's kind of a little bit what you said about your family, but it the list was be healthy as fuck, provide for and protect my family, create value for the world, save in Bitcoin, play a lot, work very little, and savor the magic of life. I was like, dude, I could put this up on my wall. I think it would remind me each day. You know, I have a mission I live by. But I just, and I particularly like the play a lot, because I feel like that gets overlooked. I'm a big proponent of play. I love play. I love playful people. And I think fiat has done its damnedest to kind of squelch a natural playfulness in people, because I think people think, well, I can't be playful. I got to be super serious because I've got bills to pay and this, you know, I've got this fiat job and this is a grind and, you know, all that stuff. But there's a ton of power in embracing play, a ton of learning. And I would love to see Bitcoin start a revolution in education where they're not just tormented at their desk learning a bunch of nonsense that they're never going to use, that they start to tap into either homeschooling or schools start to tap into what Bitcoin is, but also instill, just bring forth a natural playfulness in young people, because I feel like our education, at least in the States, I'm sure it's probably not that much better up there. If you're going to send them to the government indoctrination camps, basically is what they are, they're not interested in preserving any playfulness. And I don't know if they're interested in any of the things on your life plan, to be honest with you. So I guess I just wanted to, I saw it and I was like, what a great life plan. That's a great thing to have up on your wall. And yeah, just get, I'll let you comment on any of it, how you came up with it, or, you know, anything at all.
Yeah. I think having, being clear on priorities in life has always been very important to me. Like, just at any given time, having radical clarity to the point where someone came up to you and said, what matters most to you? I could answer it right away. Someone said, what do you want to do in life? What's your plan for living a life well-lived? Mm-hmm. I should be able to spit it off, because I should know it deeply and not have to really think about it, because it's just my default programming. If I've repeated it enough and thought about it deeply enough, then I should be able to know it. And I think most of the stuff I post on Nostr are really just notes to self. They're either research notes or they're just reminders to myself to hold myself accountable to living the kind of extraordinary and also simple life that I really want to live. I'm reading this book, right? I just started the audiobook called Dumbing Us Down by John Taylor Gatto, which goes through the hidden curriculum of compulsory schooling, and it's just dark. I really think that as a parent, this should almost be mandatory reading for all parents to really understand what you're sending your kids to if you're sending them to government-owned schools. On the topic of play, you know, when I left physio treating symptoms and diagnosing people, I went into healthcare, started a foot health business, and a lot of it revolved around play because I think the only way people can actually do things consistently is if they're fun, right? You don't have to force yourself to do fun things. You do them because they're fun. And so trying to get people to playfully recalibrate their lower bodies with balance training, which calms the mind, which recalibrates the body, really opened my eyes to the fact that play is this incredibly important learning tool that adults have really lost touch with, like you said, largely because of the fiat mindset, where it's like you must work at all times, grind, 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 no time for play, play is nonsense. But what people don't understand is actually play can be quite serious. Play is one of the ultimate learning tools along with storytelling. These are OG human learning technologies that we've kind of forgotten about. And I think what I've noticed in my life is the more I play, unstructured, free play, it might be physical, it might be mental by learning, the better my life satisfaction is, the better quality my work is, and the more creative I am. And I think that's really where I want to play a lot and work very little. It turns out that if you try and give value to the world in alignment with what you actually love to do, you have to work very little. There's still some work. There's still some things you must do as a means to an end, and that's fine. But it doesn't have to be very much if you've really designed your life in a way that most of what you do to give value to the world is play for you, which gives value to the world to others. And that's like, that's what we should all aim for, I think. Or at least that's what I'm aiming for. And I want my daughter to be able to understand that it's possible. You can actually have fun all day, work very little. You need to work, but you can work very little and you can live a really extraordinarily fulfilling life, be healthy, upgrade the world. And just, you know, the idea that we're supposed to slave away in some mindless, unenjoyable drudgery for the majority of our lives just to earn enough money to retire and do nothing is such a dumb, stupid story that we've just been programmed with. And it's old and it's dying, right? Change happens one funeral at a time. Well, the funeral of all the people who lived in alignment with that is dying with them. And there's a new story that I think is ready to be told. I think there's a lot of people who are in between. They know that that sucks. Yeah. They don't quite know what's possible. So they're kind of meandering and they're kind of lost. And then they get grabbed by Bitcoin and they get grabbed by the notion of wanting to be healthy so that they can realize the value of their Bitcoin. And it just sets them on a path to really realizing that health matters more than the amount of zeros you have in your bank account. And that's really why I've chosen to, you know, be a Bitcoin advisor. And actually, it's more of a wealth advisor because to me, wealth is health and money, whereas Bitcoin is more just the money side. And I think a lot of Bitcoiners are realizing that, well, now that I have money worth living well in the future for, so that I can actually, you know, have that money support me to live a great life, I actually really need to take care of myself.
Yep.
And I think the fiat world of disease care, which is all about telling you what disease you've got and what treatment you need, it doesn't overlap well with the future world that I see, which is a Bitcoin world. And what does align is healthcare, which is people making money by helping others take better care of themselves, by helping them know what the next step on their journey is, what they should learn about, more importantly, what they should remove from their life, right? Because actually what you remove is often far more important than what you add. That was the white paper I wrote. Really, I went through this journey of trying to articulate everything I'd learned over a decade of specializing in feet. And what I realized was in the end, there's only three principles. Lower your time preference by saving in Bitcoin. Eliminate unnatural inputs from your life and add natural inputs to your life. That's literally it. Nothing else needs to be told. People obviously need a definition of time preference. How do you lower your time preference? You do it by saving in Bitcoin. And what are natural and unnatural inputs? You know, like my a six-year-old can understand that. They're not really like, you know, it's not rocket science. But the idea that disease care and disease in general is incredibly complex, right? Mm-hmm. You're adding more entropy to a system that's out of optimal function, but health is actually incredibly simple. And once people accept that the path to better health is actually simple and straightforward and really is about 80-20, it's like 80% of the time, do the right shit. 20% of the time, you can do whatever you want and you're probably going to be okay. Yep. But you need to know what is most important that you should be doing most consistently, which is only about 20% of things, but returns 80% of the benefit. And once people know that, it's incredibly liberating. And, you know, I often see it on people's face. They get a wave of ease. They're like, oh, I don't have to learn a million things or do a billion extra things. I just have to focus on these critical things, trim all this shit from my life slowly but surely. And when they start feeling better, that's their instant feedback. Say, oh, I just got to keep going and doing this. And I think the biggest cheat code I pass on to people regarding lower extremity health or lower body health in general is 99% of people are wearing shoes that damage their feet. Your feet are the foundation for your body. If you damage your foundation, your entire body ends up being compromised. And so natural footwear, shoes that respect the health and function of your feet, is the easiest, simplest, and most profound change you can make for your lower body. And I just wanted to plug that in there because I think it's still a very little known fact. And it still remains my biggest cheat code to give people for a healthier lower body after a decade of specializing in foot health and going really deep. It's literally just wear better shoes.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned something just a bit back there about play. I remember reading, and it resonated with me. I remember decades ago, there wasn't really many books on play. I think there's a lot more now and how it relates to education and stuff, but it was a book called Free Play by Stephen Nachmanovich. He's actually was a guest on the show way back in the day. And I remember he had a study in there that said that playfulness and play was a sign of higher intelligence. And it really, it really intuitively resonated with me because you think like how playful Mozart was, and you think of like high level artists, musicians have a sense of playfulness when they're creating music. Entrepreneurs can often be very playful in how they riff on what they're seeing for the future. And so to me, and athletes also carry a bodily intelligence with a sense of playfulness as well. And so for me, the sense of play always kind of resonated with a higher vibration, also higher intelligence, an understanding of maybe the divine play, some way that we interact with the divine that could be very playful as well. So there was always these kind of mysterious kind of notes in play that I could see in other people that were channeling it or were tuned into it. And I think that's one of the values of it as well. I think it's very underrated as a quality to help people nurture or cultivate in themselves.
One thing I will say, interesting fun fact, the more intelligent the animal, the more it plays. It's like a very tight correlation in nature. You know, like a snail doesn't play very much, and dolphins and elephants play all the time. So I think, you know, the more intelligent the animal, the more it plays. I think the two are interrelated because the more you play, you know, I watch my daughter learning how to move. Everything she does is play. The way she learned how to walk and crawl and grab things and bring them to her mouth is literally all trial and error play. It's all fun. And that really has been a great reminder to me to find the more playful side in everything I do, because it's there if you're looking for it. And you just have to really be open-minded that actually mundane tasks can be incredibly playful if you just choose for that to be the case.
Love it. Well, Caribou, thank you so much for coming on Basecamp for Men. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I feel like we were sitting around the campfire, poking at the embers and shooting the shit on all the things that we love. So thank you so much for taking time today. Come back anytime. I'm really curious to see as the pharma unfolds and you start to offer products and stuff, please let us know and keep in touch with us. Okay.
I will. Actually, I said there wasn't anything to mention at the end, but I'll say two things. Caribou Farm on Noster. And then the company that I work with, is called Soul Freedom, S-O-L-E Freedom, soulfreedom.ca. It's owned by Bitcoiners, run by Bitcoiners. They sell shoes that respect your feet. They have North America's largest collection of natural shoes. So check them out if you're interested in shoes. Tony, thank you so much for having me. And thanks for doing podcasts, because it really is a lot of energy and effort with not a huge amount of instant gratification. Yeah. But I think for me, podcasts have been an indispensable tool for learning about everything that I'm curious about. And so thank you for taking the time to do this, for having the conversation today. And thanks everyone for listening.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. What a bright, clear thinker he is. I really love that. There's a revolution afoot, and it centers around Bitcoin. If ever there was something to roll up your sleeves and understand, it is this. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.